Welcome to the holiday edition of Treasures Old and New from ART. Hi, I'm Joy Jackson. The following shows were part of our annual Christmas party in December. We broadcast a live show to our compatriots in Kentucky, and they broadcast one back to us in Seattle. First one up is one from Art Lexington. Lest you become confused, the following Great Gildersleeve episode was written by Mike Wheeler and was never broadcast way back when. One of my ART actors thought otherwise. I think you'll agree that it certainly could have been.
It's the Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
The Lexington chapter of American Radio Theater presents a special Christmas edition of The Great Gildersleeve. Now let's look in on The Great Gildersleeve. It's Christmas Eve morning, and while Summerfield slept, Mother Nature has deposited a few inches of fresh snow on the ground. In the Gildersleeve household, we find Leroy and his uncle seated at the breakfast table.
When do you think Marge will be coming home, Mom? The house just doesn't feel the same without her.
Not for a couple of weeks, I suppose, Leroy. You know Aunt Hattie's getting on in years, and since she broke her wrist, she needs Marjorie to help her around the house.
Yeah, I know, but she picked a lousy time to break it. It's sure going to be a funny Christmas without Marge here.
It could be worse, my boy. Aunt Hattie could have decided to come here to convalesce.
Talk about taking one for the team. I'll have to remember to be nicer to Marge when she does come home.
We'll call Aunt Hattie long distance tomorrow, and you can wish them both a Merry Christmas. I'm sure Marjorie misses us just as much as we miss her.
Okay.
Now, Leroy, take your time. Don't wolf down your food like that.
But,
I have to be in the office in half an hour, but you don't see me wolfing down my food, do you?
What food? Bertie hasn't even brought yours out yet.
No, she hasn't. Oh, Bertie?
Besides, Unc, it snowed last night.
What has that got to do with anything?
That means there are sidewalks to be shoveled. I'm meeting Piggy in a few minutes, and we're going to make some money shoveling sidewalks.
Starting with ours, I presume.
Aw, Unc.
And whose shovel were you planning to use for this new business venture of yours?
Well, whenever it needs any pushing, it seems to belong to me.
Well, I'll tell you what, Leroy. In keeping with the spirit of the season, I'll give you and Piggy the prevailing rate. How much do you charge?
Would you believe $5?
Hardly.
Well, you can't blame a kid for trying. How about 50 cents, then?
That sounds more reasonable. Oh, Bertie! Bertie!
Sorry for the delay, Mr. Gildersleeve. I'm afraid I burned the toast a trifle.
The pancakes seem a little on the rigid side, too.
I'm sorry, sir. I guess I got a little distracted and lost track of the time.
That's all right, Bertie. I'm sure with all the preparations you have to make for our big Christmas Eve gathering this evening, that breakfast just fell by the wayside.
Yes, sir. About this evening. How many was it you was expecting for dinner again?
Well, there's Leroy and myself, of course. Leela and the judge and the Peavies. I was thinking I might invite Bessie, too. I'm not sure whether she's going home to be with her family or if she has other plans, but it would be a nice gesture. A 14-pound turkey ought to go that far, shouldn't it?
With a little help from the pantry, I think we can make it stretch.
Yes, the pantry. We still have some of those green beans from the Victory Garden that you canned. Those will be a real treat. Ooh, good thinking, Bertie.
And the pumpkins we grew should make a swell pumpkin pie.
Excellent idea, Leroy.
I'm real sorry about the vulcanized flapjacks, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Just don't let the government find out about them. If they do, I'll have to apply for a priority every time I want a short stack.
If you'll give me just a few minutes, I can mix you up another batch in a jiffy.
Well, I don't have time for that now. I'll just have a quick cup of coffee and be on my way.
Coffee?
Yes, coffee. That hot black beverage that's customarily served with breakfast?
Well, you see, Mr. Gildersleeve, I'm afraid I sort of forgot to put on the percolator.
Oh, my goodness. Well, never mind. There's no time to brew a pot now. I've got to get down to City Hall for a meeting with the mayor.
What kind of meeting are you having on Christmas Eve, huh?
The kind where they hand out Christmas bonuses, I hope, Leroy. I'll see you both later.
Oh,
Morning, Bessie.
Good morning, Mr. Gildersleeve. It looks like we're going to have a nice white Christmas.
Oh, no time for chit-chat right now. I'm running late. I'm going to hang up my coat here, and I've got to run right up to the mayor's office.
Why, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Well, it's Christmas Eve, Bessie, and traditionally on Christmas Eve, the city fathers see fit to reward all the little city workers who have been really, really good with a token of their appreciation.
But the mayor already left for the day.
What?
Mayor Terwilliger's secretary was here just a few minutes ago. She said he already went home for the day. But she did leave an envelope for you. It's on your desk.
An envelope? Well, well. Merry Christmas, Bessie.
Merry Christmas to you, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Why, that no good, Terwilliger?
What's the matter, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Due to fiscal restraints imposed by the city council and in an effort to combat inflation, there will be no cash bonuses for Summerfield municipal employees this year. The cheapskate. However, in order to allow city workers to enjoy more of the holiday with their families and loved ones, city offices will close at noon on Christmas Eve. I will be attending the Small Town Mayors Association meeting in Miami through the second week of January. I look forward to seeing you all in the new year upon my return.
Oh, Miami.
Merry Christmas, Mayor Scrooge.
At least he gave us a half a day
off. He's already on his way to Florida and on Summerfield's nickel. You wonder where our Christmas bonuses went, Bessie? They're on their way to Florida with the mayor.
Well, I hope they have a good time.
Bessie, get your things. We're not waiting till noon. This office is closing as of right now.
It's not even 10 o'clock yet. Do you think we should?
I'm the water commissioner of this town, and I'll run my department as I see fit. And I see fit to close for the holidays starting right now.
Well, Merry Christmas, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Bessie, before we go.
Yes?
I'm having some friends over for a Christmas Eve dinner this evening, and I know your family is out of town, so if you don't have any other plans...
Thank you, Mr. Gildersleeve. That's very kind of you. But I'm going to spend Christmas Eve with my boyfriend, Irving. I think he might have a special present for me.
Irving? I've never heard you mention Irving before.
Well, we've only been going out for a month or so, but he wants me to meet his family.
Well, congratulations, Bessie, and the best of luck to you both.
Irving's not really much to look at. He's not particularly athletic either, or even very smart.
I see.
But he has the one thing a girl looks for in a man when there's a war going on.
What's that?
Flat feet.
Flat feet? Oh. Yeah.
Before we go, I do have something for you, though, Mr. Gildersleeve.
What's that?
Do you remember that mistletoe you had hanging in the doorway?
Yeah.
Well, look where you're standing.
Why, Bessie.
Merry Christmas, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Well, Merry Christmas, Bessie.
Good morning, Peavy. Brr.
Good morning, Judge. Is it cold enough out there for you?
I'll say. How about a mug of your world-famous hot cocoa?
And coming right up.
Did I see Leroy and that Banks boy come out of here a minute ago, Peavy?
Yes, they were both just in here. Leroy was doing some last-minute Christmas shopping. I don't normally sell tobacco products to children, but he wanted to buy some cigars for his uncle.
They acted kind of skittish when they saw me coming. Took off like jackrabbits. So, Gildy's getting some Corona Coronas for Christmas.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that. I offered to sell them to Leroy at a discount, 5 for $1. But he went with the El Lobos at 3 for $0.25.
Gildersleeve won't know the difference anyway.
He does tend to favor the El Lobos himself. Well, speak of the devil. Here he is now. Good morning, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Good morning, Peavy. Judge, Peavy, I'm absolutely famished. What have you got behind that lunch counter of yours today?
How about a nice turkey salad sandwich?
Turkey salad? I'll probably be eating that for the next week. Haven't you got anything else?
Well, now, let's see. I've got some cheese and pressed ham.
Pressed ham? Yeah. I guess I'll get an early start on the turkey salad then, Peavy.
Why are you so hungry this early in the day, Gildy? It's not lunchtime yet.
If you must know, I didn't have any breakfast.
What'd you do, oversleep?
I'll have you know I was up and at the table in plenty of time, you old goat. Bertie just didn't seem to be quite on the ball this morning for some reason, that's all.
Is Bertie not feeling well?
I don't know, Horace. She did seem a little distracted, and now that you mention it, I think she did have bags under her eyes. You don't suppose she's still having trouble with that finance company, do you?
No, that's been taken care of. Her brother is protected by the Soldiers and Sailors Relief Act, and that extends to her as a co-maker. They're both immune from any prosecution for the duration.
Here's your sandwich, Mr. Gildersleeve. Coffee?
Yes, please.
I'll be with you in just a moment. Hello, Peavy's Pharmacy. This is Mr. Peavy speaking. Oh, hello, Mrs. Ransom. Why, yes, he is here. Just a moment. It's for you, Mr. Gildersleeve. It's Mrs. Ransom.
Hello, Leela. Leela! Slow down, Leela. Now, what's the matter? Bertie? What? She? Oh, my goodness. I'm on my way. Bertie! Leela!
In here, Throckmorton.
Bertie, for heaven's sake, what's the matter?
I'm sorry, Mr. Gildersleeve. I didn't want to burden you with my troubles.
Burden? What in the world's going on here?
I found it this way, Throckmorton. I came over to borrow a couple of eggs. I was going to bake a cake to bring over with me this evening, and I found it this way, just crying her eyes out.
Bertie, please, tell us what's the matter.
It's my brother, Mr. Gildersleeve. My baby brother, Buddy.
The one who's in the army.
Yes, sir. Corporal Clarence D. Coggins. We always called him Buddy. He joined up right after Pearl Harbor. He didn't wait to be drafted, no, sir. He joined right up. And ever since D-Day, he's been driving a truck back and forth between Omaha Beach and the front lines, keeping the army supplied with food and ammunition.
The Red Ball Express.
Yes, sir, the Red Ball. About a week ago, Mama got a telegram. Buddy was missing in action.
Bertie!
Oh, Bertie, I'm so sorry.
Mama didn't tell me at first. But yesterday, she got another telegram. They changed Buddy's status from missing in action to missing in action presumed dead. Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve! I helped raise that boy. What am I gonna do?
We can all pray for him, Bertie. That's what. And don't give up hope. If he's missing in action, no matter what they presume, there's still some hope.
That's right, Bertie. And this is the best time of year to be praying for a miracle. Miracles do still happen.
Well, Buddy did his duty, and I'm not going to shirk mine. I've got a dinner to get ready.
Now, Bertie, don't be silly.
Nobody expects you to.
No, sir. I've got to do this. I'm not going to start letting people down just because I have some burdens of my own. No, sir.
I can take over making dinner, Bertie.
What?
No, ma'am. I am going to do my duty.
Bertie, for crying out loud.
Not going to abandon my post. No, sir. Oh, my, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Throckmorton, she's fainted.
I'll get her back on the sofa. You call Dr. Pettibone. No, quick.
We'll return to the great Gildersleeve in just a few moments. Ladies, are you looking for a way to stretch those red ration points? Do you need a delicious, nourishing dish that you can prepare in just 7 minutes by the clock? Then say hello to Kraft Dinner Macaroni and Cheese. Yes, Kraft Dinner Macaroni and Cheese is the red point saver that you make in just 7 minutes by the clock. And it's as easy as 1, 2, 3. If you can boil water, you can make fluffy, delicious macaroni in no time at all. Each package has Kraft Special No-Bake Macaroni that you simply boil and drain. Also in the box, you will find a packet of Kraft's very special grated cheese product. That's the secret of this point-saving, time-saving wonder food. If you're strapped for time or short on points, Kraft Dinner Macaroni and Cheese is the product you've been waiting for. So the next time you shop, look for, ask for Kraft Dinner Macaroni and Cheese. Did I mention that it only takes 2 red ration points? Yes, Kraft Dinner Macaroni and Cheese. It's made by Kraft. Now back to the Great Gildersleeve. It's 12:30 on Christmas Eve, and so far the day's been filled with anything but holiday cheer. We find Gildersleeve pacing back and forth nervously while Doc Pettibone tends to Bertie in another room.
Confound it! What's taking him so long?
Now, Throckmorton, Dr. Pettibone has only been here for a few minutes. Be patient. Bertie is in good hands.
Maybe we should call an ambulance. If anything happens to Bertie,
Why don't you let the doctor decide what to do? If he thinks we need an ambulance, I'm sure he'll let us know right away.
Poor Bertie, I had no idea. And I was so abrupt with her this morning, over a silly stack of pancakes.
Now, Throckmorton, don't blame yourself. You didn't know.
Hi, Unc. Hello, Mrs. Ransom. Is that Doc Pettibone's car I saw out front?
Yes, it is, Leroy.
Well, where's Doc Pettibone?
He's with Bertie.
Bertie?
She's been under a lot of stress lately, Leroy, and a little while ago, she fainted.
Gosh!
Dr. Pettibone, how is she, Doc?
Bertie is resting comfortably, Gildy. I gave her a mild sedative, so she'll be a little drowsy for the rest of the afternoon.
What happened, Doc? It wasn't her heart?
No, her heart is fine. Her blood pressure's a little elevated, but apparently she hasn't eaten anything since yesterday morning, and with the stress...
Is she going to be all right?
She'll be fine, but it may take a little time for her to deal with the grief, losing her brother.
Her brother?
Bertie's little brother is missing in action, Leroy.
Gosh.
I'm afraid I've seen far too many cases like this the past few years.
That means we've got to be very understanding with her, Leroy, especially at this time of year.
Leroy, let me take a look at you. How do you feel?
I'm fine, Dr. Pettibone.
You look a little pale and just a little green. Let me feel your forehead.
I'm fine, Doc, really. Can I go up to my room, Unc, and lay down for a while?
You want to take a nap? Leroy, you must be sick.
I think I know the cause of Leroy's malaise.
Good grief. What have we got, an epidemic?
In Leroy's case, it's just a simple case of wolf bite, eh, Leroy?
Wolf bite?
El Lobo's revenge.
I'll get it.
It's nothing to get too concerned over, Gildersleeve.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Banks.
Hello, Leroy. Is your uncle in?
Well,
Yes, he's in, Mrs. Banks. Come right in. Very good to see you again.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Gildersleeve. Oh, Dr. Pettibone, I do hope nobody's ill.
Well, I was just having a look at Leroy here.
Yes, I see. Well, you know, I'm not one to carry tales, Mr. Gildersleeve. But do you by any chance know what your nephew has been up to this morning?
Well, I believe he and Piggy were going to shovel some sidewalks, Mrs. Banks. Enterprising young men, those boys of ours. Hardworking. Fine lads.
Enterprising indeed, Mr. Gildersleeve. Leroy and Theodore did shovel some sidewalks. And do you know what they did with the money they made?
Well, no.
Why don't you tell your uncle, Leroy?
It wasn't my idea, Aunt. Piggy dared me.
Dared you to what, young man?
Well, all I wanted to do was get you a Christmas present, Unc. So me and Piggy went to Mr. Peavy's after we finished shoveling. We only made a couple of dollars, and I had to split it with Pig. But I used my share to buy some cigars.
Mr. Peavy sold you cigars at your age? My goodness!
I told him they were for Unc, and they were for Unc. But Piggy dared me to smoke one.
Leroy?
So I dared him to smoke one back.
You know better than that, Leroy.
I don't see how you stand it, Unc. We were both choking and coughing our heads off, but neither one of us was willing to be the first to quit. We both smoked a whole cigar, and I feel really sick.
Theodore has been quite indisposed as well, and I thought you ought to know about it, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Yes, well, thank you, Mrs. Banks. I hope Theodore isn't too ill.
I'm sure he'll survive. What do you propose to do about this, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Well, in my day, if a parent caught a boy Leroy's age with a cigar, the punishment was usually to make him smoke the whole thing. but it looks like Leroy and Theodore managed to punish themselves.
Yes, I suppose they did. I just hope they learned their lesson. Well, I'll be on my way, Mr. Gildersleeve. A Merry Christmas to you.
Yes, Merry Christmas, Mrs. Banks. Leroy?
Yes, Uncle?
Go to your room. Are you comfortable, Bertie? Can I get you anything? A pillow, a glass of water, anything?
I'm okay now, Mr. Gildersleeve, really. Won't you please just let me go back to my kitchen?
Dr. Pettibone said you're to take it easy. Don't worry. Leela is taking care of the dinner preparation.
But, Mr. Gildersleeve...
Bertie, where do you keep your grits?
Grits?
Yes, I want to make my grandmother Beecham's famous grits and okra casserole. It's a family recipe that's been handed down for generations.
Your grits and okra?
It's simply delicious. It reminds me of Christmas when I was a little girl back home in Savannah.
Oh, Savannah.
Christmas time just doesn't seem right without peach cobbler, hot cider in front of the fireplace, and some of Grandmother Beecham's grits and okra casserole.
I'm sorry, Miss Ransom, but we just don't have any grits in this house.
Well, that's all right. I'll just use cornmeal instead. You do have cornmeal.
Yes'm. It's in the pantry on the right middle shelf.
Well, good. Now, I won't even bother to ask about the okra. Maybe I can substitute eggplant. Thank goodness the judge insisted we grow some eggplant.
Yes, every year he insists on eggplant. I'll have to remember to thank Horace for that the very next time I see him.
One more thing, Bertie. When do you think I should start the turkey roasting?
The turkey? Oh, about 6 hours ago.
Oh, dear. Well, maybe if I turn up the heat. Throckmorton, we may have to eat a little later than you originally planned.
I'll go and call the judge and Mr. Peavy and see if I can't buy us a little time.
Ms. Ransom, there ain't no way you're going to have that turkey done at a decent hour. There just ain't no way.
Now, don't you worry yourself about it, Bertie. Not even one little bit. The doctor said not to let you get excited. You just take it easy and let little old Leela take care of everything.
But Ms. Ransom...
Hey, Aunt, can I come downstairs now?
Your uncle is in the study, Leroy, making a phone call. Why don't you come on down? I reckon he'll let me grant a parole, seeing as it is Christmas Eve.
Okay.
Sit down here beside me, Leroy. I hear you and Piggy got into a little mischief this morning.
Yeah, I guess we did. It was all Piggy's fault, though.
Piggy, huh?
Well, I guess maybe it was my fault a little bit, too.
Yes, maybe it was a little. Young boys is always in such a hurry to be growed up. My little brother Buddy was like that, too. Always testing the limits. I don't know how my mama put up with him sometimes. Lord, she loved that boy.
I'm really sorry about your brother, Bertie.
I know you are, Leroy. But Buddy was doing what he wanted to do, serving his country. He was proud to be doing that, too, and I'm proud of him for doing it.
And now he's missing in action?
That's right, Leroy. My mama's Christmas present this year may turn out to be a gold star to hang in the window.
Dear.
What is that woman doing to my kitchen?
What was that?
I think Mrs. Ransom was cooking for us, Unc.
Don't sound like any kind of cooking I know about.
Yes, well, she would probably be more at home in her own kitchen, but I'm sure she's certainly trying.
What was it that Mr. Ransom passed away from anyway, Unc? Do you happen to know?
Leroy, Mrs. Ransom is a fine cook. I thought I told you to go to your room.
I asked him to come down, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Oh, well, all right then. But you be on your best behavior, young man.
Yes, sir.
Ooh, now what?
Sounds like the turkey's trying to escape.
Please, Mr. Gildersleeve, let me get off this couch and...
Hey, Unc, do you smell smoke?
Smoke?
Oh, Lordy mercy!
Something's burning.
Throckmorton, you don't happen to have a fire extinguisher out there anywhere, do you?
A fire extinguisher?
Oh, never mind. It's out. Throckmorton, The judge and the Peavies will be here any minute. What in the world are we going to do?
Don't panic, Lila. We have those green beans that Bertie can, and we can heat up a couple of jars of those in a jiffy.
But my grits and okra casserole...
That's all right. We can use it for a doorstop while the kitchen airs out. Just remind me to take it out and hide it afterwards. That was Bertie's favorite casserole dish.
But the turkey won't be ready before midnight. What are we going to do for a main dish?
Oh, don't worry about that.
But Throckmorton...
Don't worry about it, Leah. Here's a couple of boxes of Kraft dinner. We can make delicious, fluffy macaroni and cheese in just 7 minutes by the clock.
That's right. I've heard about that on the radio, and only 2 red ration points.
Someone's here. You get working on the Kraft dinner, and I'll see who it is.
Oh, hello, Judge Hooker. Come on in.
Good evening, Leroy. Hello, Gildy. I stopped by the bakery on the way over and picked up some nice dinner rolls.
Very thoughtful of you, Judge. Come on in and have a seat.
How's Bertie doing?
She's doing all right, all things considered.
Oh, hello, Bertie. My sincerest condolences for your loss.
Thank you, Judge.
I understand that Mrs. Ransom is pinch-hitting in the kitchen this evening.
Yes, sir.
That will be the Peavies. Get that, Leroy.
Okay.
I'm afraid dinner isn't going to be quite what I originally planned, Horace, but Leela has given it the old college try.
I'm sure everything will be fine.
Telegram from Miss Bertie Lee Coggins.
Hey,
Coming, Leroy. I'll take that, young man. Thank you. Here.
Thank you, sir. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Well, Bertie, it's a telegram for you.
Will you open it for me, please, Mr. Gillsleeve? I just can't.
Well, all right. Well, listen to this, Bertie. Buddy, alive and well, recuperating hospital, expect full recovery. Merry Christmas, love, Mama.
Oh, Mr. Gillsleeve!
That's wonderful news, Bertie.
Oh, boy!
Well, now we have something to really celebrate.
What's going on in here? What's all the commotion?
We just got a telegram, Leela. Bertie's brother's okay. Apparently he was wounded, but they expect him to make a full recovery.
Oh, Bertie, I'm so happy for you.
Is my Christmas prayer answered? That's what it is? Praise the Lord!
Well, now that we have something to celebrate, dinner's just about ready. I'm afraid it isn't up to Bertie's high standards, but I don't think anyone will go away hungry.
That will be the Peavies. Peavy. Oh, Mrs. Peavy, it's good to see you both.
And good evening, Mr. Gildersleeve. Was that a Western Union man I saw?
It certainly was, Peavy. Wonderful news. Bertie's brother's alive. He's in the hospital, but he's alive.
Well, that is good news.
It certainly is. My goodness, don't you two stand out there in the cold. Come in.
Thank you, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Did you remember to bring that item from the pharmacy?
Yes, sir. I have it right here.
Everybody, I think we can all sit down to dinner now that the Peavies are here. Open up that sack, will you, Pete?
Here they are.
Fine. Yes, indeed. How can we possibly go wrong? Kraft dinner macaroni and cheese, green beans from our own victory garden, hot dinner rolls courtesy of the judge, and turkey salad sandwiches handmade and fresh from Peavy's Pharmacy. It's a Christmas Eve dinner we're all sure to remember for years to come.
Well, now, I wouldn't say... Well, maybe... Yes, I guess maybe I would at that.
Yeah! Merry Christmas, Peavy. Merry Christmas, everybody.
This special Christmas edition of The Great Gildersleeve starred John Greenway as The Great Gildersleeve. Missy Carl played Leroy and Lisette Ralph played Bertie. Also in our cast, you heard Lurlin Lahr as Bessie, John Heflin as the judge, Pam Hungate as Leela Ransom, Stuart Talbert as Doc Pettibone, Susie Hutchison as Mrs. Banks, and yours truly, Bob Hutchison, as Mr. Peavy. Sound effects by John Heflin and Stuart Talbert. Story consultant, Pam Hungate. This program was written and directed by Mike Wheeler. And that's the way it was, December 24th, 1944. This is Bob Hutchison speaking for all of us in the Lexington chapter of ART, wishing you the very best of the holiday season and a very Merry Christmas. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Our next offering is Get a Life, Cinderella.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce to you the Fairy Godmother's Assistant.
Hi, that's me. The Fairy Godmother's Assistant. My job used to be quite simple, really. And then the Fairy Godmother announced that she was going to take a vacation and that I would have to sub for her while she was away. I was scared stiff. I didn't know any magic. I couldn't have turned a pumpkin into a coach if my life depended upon it.
Don't worry, the Fairy Godmother told her. You're very sensible. I'm sure you'll find a way to handle whatever comes up. I'll only be gone for a couple of days.
To be honest with you, I didn't get much sleep that night. I kept wondering how I could possibly fill the fairy godmother's shoes.
The assistant got up early the next morning and went to the kitchen to make a pitcher of lemonade. There was a knock at the door. The assistant opened it. And there stood a young woman with a tear-stained face and wearing a dirty, tattered old dress.
Oh, good morning. You must be looking for the fairy godmother. She's away on a little vacation. I'm her assistant, and I'll have her give you a call when she returns. Now, if you'll just leave me your name and your number... Oh, my. I guess it can't wait. Well, come in and have a glass of lemonade.
Oh, thank you.
Here's a hanky, dear. Lemonade coming right up. Now, tell me what's bothering you.
Well, my name's Ella, but my stepmother and stepsisters call me Cinder Ella. You see, I'm always covered with cinders from cleaning the fireplace. They're so mean to me. They make me clean and cook and iron and sew and run errands. All they do is take naps and have fun and try to make themselves look beautiful. And now I have to sew new gowns for them to wear to the King's Royal Ball. And I want to go to the mall, too.
And I suppose you came here to ask the fairy godmother to get you to the ball. Is that it? Oh, I wish I could help you, dear, but I make lemonade, not magic.
Can't you do anything?
Well, I'm afraid not. It's really up to you, Ella.
Up to me?
Yes, it's quite simple. If you want to go to the ball, just go. And don't let anything or anyone stop you.
But how can I go to the ball without an evening gown?
Don't look at me. You're the seamstress. If you can make gowns for your two stepsisters, why not make another one for yourself?
But I can't afford to buy silk or velvet. How can I make a gown without any fabric?
Well, are there velvet curtains in the house? Any silk bedspreads?
Yes, there sure are. But what about dancing slippers? I don't have any.
Well, then don't wear any.
You mean I should go to the ball barefoot?
Well, what choice do you have? Unless you want to wear those work boots you're wearing now. They're a good deal sturdier than glass slippers for dancing, and they won't fall off when you kick up your heels.
But how am I supposed to get to the ball? The royal palace is almost a mile from my house.
I suppose you'll have to walk.
That'd take quite a long time.
Start early.
But they'll never let me in if I don't arrive in a fancy horse-drawn carriage.
Well, probably not at the main gate. I don't suppose there'd be anyone guarding the back door to the kitchen, do you?
I suppose not. But if the prince asks me to dance, what should I say?
Ask him not to step on your boots. Cinderella, go to the ball. What have you got to lose?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Thank you. Thank you for all your help. I've got
got to run now. So many things to do.
Oh, there's something else, dear. Be home by midnight. Just a suggestion.
The next day, around noon, the assistant heard a knock at the door. She opened the door, and there stood Cinderella, carrying a suitcase and looking tired, but very happy.
Cinderella, how was the ball?
The ball was wonderful! The food, the music, the dancing, everything was wonderful. And I got home before midnight. I just came by to say thanks again. I never would have gone without your help.
Oh, I can't take any credit. You did it all yourself. By the way, what's in your suitcase?
All my belongings. I really can't live with my stepmother and stepsisters any longer. So, I've decided to move into town and open up a dressmaker's shop. I am a very good seamstress, you know. Well, thanks ever so for your advice yesterday.
Oh, my pleasure, dear. May I be your first customer? When you're set up in town, I'll drop by for a new dress.
Terrific! Shall I order you a matching pair of work boots?
The fairy godmother returned the next day. She said, "You see, I told you when I left, you could handle whatever comes up."
I wonder if those were magic words. Let's listen in to some Christmas music and Christmas programming from the days of old-time radio.
Well, this makes the seventh Christmas that Bing has sung at Esti Fidelis here in the Old Craft Music Hall in Latin and English.
This seems like the most natural year for everybody to join in on the English chorus.
Might be nice if everyone at home joined us, too.
Oh, we're counting on them. Adeste fidelis, laeti triumphantes, venite in Bethlehem. Here in the hall, Faye Bainter, Janet Blair, Andrew Toombs, Jack Parson, Music Maids in Hal, the Charioteers, Ken, John Scott, everybody at home in the family key, once through in English, huh?
All come, O ye faithful, joyful and triumphant, O come ye, O come ye, to
everybody in the Old Craft Music Hall, short waving the season's greetings to battle stations all over the world. And for said strong points, we have something new and extremely attractive. Columbia Pictures' new star of My Sister Eileen and the forthcoming film Something to Shout About, Miss Janet Blair. Janet joins us KMHers of this Christmas Eve. Joins us permanently. Everything copacetic for Christmas, Janet?
Well, I don't know, Bing. I'm a little worried about tomorrow, though.
worried about Christmas? Why?
Yeah, we asked Johnny Trotter to our house for dinner.
You are in a little trouble, but I got a TL for you, Janet. Johnny has got himself a diet.
Yeah, but that's the trouble. He doesn't start on that diet until December the 26th. Until then, well, he's dreaming of a wide Christmas.
A wide? You know, I saw John Scott standing in a safety zone the other day, this afternoon, and an automobile practically knocked him down.
Well, if he was in a safety zone, why didn't they drive around him?
Well, the fellow only had an A card.
Hey, Janet, you know Johnny a long time, haven't you?
Well, I've known him longer than he's been here in the Kraft Music Hall.
Oh, would you say he's changed much in the past few years?
Oh, no. If I hadn't seen Johnny in years, I could spot him a mile away.
Who couldn't?
Janet, be nice. Be nice.
I met him on the boulevard today, didn't I, John?
You sure did. And you helped me decide what to send a little boy I know.
How?
I was undecided whether to send a certain little boy ice skates or roller skates.
And Janet helped you decide?
She sure did. She told me to send him one of each.
Well, if he can handle himself on those, I can get him 10 weeks at the Radio City Music Hall. He'll be all right.
Are you all set for Christmas, Bing?
Yep, I made the last of my resolutions just a little while ago.
Resolutions?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're supposed to make resolutions on New Year's Eve.
Oh, not me. I got me a sister. I find it's kind of tough keeping your resolutions from New Year's to Christmas. So I make mine on Christmas, and it's a cinch to keep until New Year's.
Well, how about you this evening, Janet?
Oh, sorry, Ken, but I'm busy.
Oh, well, that's too bad. No, no, I mean later. Are you going to hang up your stockings so Santa can leave some toys?
Oh, not this year, Ken. This year, the girls are going to hang up their toys, hoping Santa Claus will leave stockings.
And it's with this Christmas thought for the distaff side of our listening membership that Janet Blair turns to a little thing called, with disarming simplicity, steam is on the beam.
The steam is on the beam. The point is that the joint is jumping. The steam is on the beam. The janitor is making with the chime. He's making with the pipe. The jive and all the pipes are taking fire. A Dixieland bee, a Methelix from Chicago, the New Orleans bee. It ain't got glamour, but it's a jammer. Oh, steam is on the beam. It doesn't want a note from Ballard, no tenor from Vienna, or an icky from Waikiki in the making with the chime. He's making with the pipe. The radiator starts to rip it. The boiler keeps alive. The jive when all the pipes are taking fire. A Dixieland bee. A Methelix from Chicago. A New Orleans bee. You bet your life is no good for. It doesn't want a no from ballad, no corny trumpet men is playing Carnival of Venice in the car. Tonight the steam is on the beam, but love, the steam is on the beam.
Sure, that's really steaming on the beam, Janet. Now, while you simmer down some, we turn to our friend Jack Carson, one of Warner Brothers' leading men and character comedians. Jack Carson is at present playing your local cinema a very fine story of the prize ring called Gentleman Jim. Certainly glad you dropped into the old Kraft Music Hall this evening. Jack, you get caught in any last-minute shopping riots? Is it getting on you? Any?
Oh, I got out with just a few minor bruises. My insurance broker's taking care of everything, including the lady who claimed I crumpled her bumper. You know, Bing, I can sympathize with those store clerks during the holiday rush. I worked in a department store one Christmas vacation when I went to school.
Were you any good at it?
School? No. But I was the best salesman at Flugel's department store. I was about the hottest thing in that place. Matter of fact, I was so hot they called me Arson Carson.
Well, you know, they're soft-peddling the high-pressure stuff these days.
Yeah?
Stores don't have much to sell.
I'll sell it even if I haven't got it.
Carp, rent this boy a store.
Coming right up. Announcing the opening of a novel shop designed especially for the sale of items that are unavailable and unobtainable. Presiding over this mammoth area of empty shelves is that new low in high-pressure salesman, Mr. Jack Carson, whose slogan is...
No use coming in as we haven't got it, and we don't know when we're going to get it, and if we do get it, we won't be here to receive it, so why don't you put your dough in war bonds?
A baby of mine.
Blues.
To celebrate the opening of his new shop, Mr. Carson is holding a gigantic going-out-of-business sale. He hopes to follow this up with his annual end-of-the-month bankruptcy sale. Due to difficulty in finding elevator operators, proprietor Carson is piloting the lift in person.
Going up. First floor, furniture, beds, and spreads. Second floor, glassware, plates, and skates. Third floor, clothing, hats, and spats. Fourth floor, hardware, pails, and nails.
Basement, everybody out.
Hey, Bud, can I get waited on?
Yeah, sure. I hope you don't see anything you like. But if you do, I'm sure we won't have it.
Well, I want to buy a Christmas card that says, Merry Christmas to the one and only girl I have ever loved.
That we just happen to have.
Here you are, sir. Merry Christmas to the one and only girl I have ever loved.
Thanks. I'll take 2 dozen of them.
Steadfast little fellow, aren't you?
Say, who's that old guy over there running up and down the stairs?
Oh, that's Santa Claus. He got his beard caught in the escalator.
From a thing like that, a guy can get a headache.
Yeah. Oh, how do you do, Mr. Carson? Well, I didn't expect to see you in this department. Last time I was here, you were in women's lingerie.
Yeah, I look so silly, though. So, I moved over to wool and underwear.
What are you laughing at?
It tickles.
Mr. Carson, I wonder if you could suggest a small gift for a small boy.
A small boy, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Say, do you know those tin soldiers in the toy department?
Why, yes.
That's funny. They don't know you.
Oh, is that so? Oh, fine thing. I'll write Washington about this. In fact, I think I'll write Adams and Jefferson, too.
You write to Washington and Jefferson, I'll deliver the letter myself.
To Washington and Jefferson?
Sure, I live on that corner.
Oh, fine.
Hiya, Mr. Carson. I'm Speed Croveny.
Well, Speed, what isn't on your mind?
Well, I can't think of what I'm not thinking of.
Well, forget it. What don't you want?
How about that overcoat over there on that dummy?
That's no dummy. That's my brother.
I know just how you feel. I got 4 of them.
Yeah.
What's this funny-looking gadget here?
That's a combination toothbrush and pliers.
What do you do with a thing like that?
If you're too lazy to brush your teeth, pull them out.
Well, in that case, I'll take a 10-cent package of soap flakes, and I brought my birth certificate.
You don't need a birth certificate to buy soap.
Oh, so that's the one thing you don't need it for.
Look, this particular soap is great for washing your silk shirts.
Don't have any silk shirts.
What? No silk shirts?
Huh.
What do you do those long winter evenings when everybody else is rinsing out their fluffy things in lukewarm suds?
I get so lonesome.
Don't ever let it be said that I'm not the kind of a guy to take the shirt off his back. Here, take my shirt. $8. A beautiful shirt and no strings attached.
No strings? How am I going to hold my socks up?
Roll them down over your shoes and make out like they're spats.
You want me to come formal, huh?
Now, look. Here's what you do.
What I do?
You take this silk shirt and you put it in the washing machine.
Oh, ain't got no washing machine.
Oh, wise guy, huh? No washing machine. Everybody's got a washing machine today, and you're going to stand there and tell me you haven't got a washing machine? Well, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Well, in that case, I'll buy one.
You got a priority?
No, ma'am.
Wise guy, eh? Trying to buy a washing machine without a priority, eh? Trying to get me in trouble. You look like the criminal type with those fancy sideburns and that jute mill Balmacan.
Well, gee, all I wanted to get was some soap flicks to wash my priority.
Yeah. Well, okay. How many soap flicks would you want if I had them?
Will it be all right if I take two boxes?
A wise guy, eh?
Oh, gee, I'm sorry.
Try to hoard soap flakes. I gotta report you. Let me tell you something, Bud. It's a good thing you came to my store. Anybody else would have reported you.
Well, I didn't mean no harm. Honest, I didn't. But I ain't leaving this store till I get something you've got.
Yeah? You know what I do to people who want what I've got when I ain't gonna give them what I got?
What you do?
I beat them to a pulp. Oh. I break their necks. Put my fingers in their eyes. Smash them. I practically annihilate them.
What happens to them?
I lose more customers that way.
For that shrinking salesman, Jack Carson. We travel now out to the old Red River Valley. Mighty pretty country out there, partner. Mighty pretty. Especially the way them charioteers handles it. Yes, yes.
I should never have taken to roving. I should never have left all my friends. 'Cause I dream of the Red River Valley and a home where the great river bends.
Lonesome and blue on the prairie, then my heart fills with endless regret, and I dream of the Red River Valley and the voice I could never forget.
Just consider a while ere you leave me. Do not hasten to bid me adieu, and remember the Red River Valley and the girl who has loved you so true.
Oh, her hair was all yellow and flowing, like the gold of a bright western sky. And her eyes were the blue of the valley, and they cried when we whispered goodbye.
Well, just consider a while ere you leave me. Do not hasten to bid me adieu, and remember the Red River Valley and the girl who has loved you so true. But I'm so tired, awful, awful tired of roaming.
Yes, and someday when I've sung every song about this day,
I'll return, return one melody to the valley, valley where I belong.
Ah, that's a fine treatment, men. The charioteers return ere long with additional arrangements. While you're waiting, cut in on this character, hmm?
Christmas Eve 1942 is one that we'll all carry in our hearts for many a year. Let us say Christmas spirit, Christmas kindness, as usual. Let us know that this night, as of other years, is the celebration of hope and joy and goodwill for the whole world. Let's make that so in each of our homes. For no matter what the world may be like, this is the night when the sugar plum fairies dance in the dreams of the little folks. This is the night when Dunder and Blitzen ride the winds jingling silvery bells. You ready for them at your house? Packages all wrapped and tied, the war-bond envelopes, and the little packages hanging on the tree, the bigger packages piled around.
As long as you're not in love with anyone else, why don't you fall in love with me? You're driving me crazy, baby. Try it again. Will you tell me no, or will you tell me yes? You gotta go overboard for someone someday. Believe it or not, it's bound to be. As long as you're not in love with anyone else, why don't you fall in love with me? You're driving me crazy, baby, trying to guess. Will you tell me no, or will you tell me yes? You gotta go overboard for someone someday. Believe it or not, it's bound to be.
Don't laugh, that stuff might come back someday.
As long as you're not in love with anyone else, why don't you fall in love with me? Oh, baby, why don't you fall in love with me?
On this Christmas Eve, 1942, the Kraft Music Hall's remembrance to our listeners is our very dear friend, Fay Bainter. To many of you, as well as to us, it wouldn't be Christmas without Fay. For it's at this time each year that Fay Bainter, reading a few words tossed off perhaps in haste by an editorial writer 46 years ago, puts our Christmas thoughts back on the beam. Last Christmas, to a nation boastful and bragging in the face of defeat, the words Francis P. Church wrote for the New York Evening Sun in 1896... seem cleansing and refreshing. And this year, with victory dimly, very dimly, on the horizon, a sober nation that is now beginning to understand what war really means also realizes that it must keep its faith. And I think Francis Church's letter to Virginia will help do just that. Don't you, Faye?
Yes, Bing. More than anything pompous, more than anything martial. I think we parents know that in keeping our children's faith in things as they truly are, not things as war distorts them, we will be protecting them against the hard days, the very hard times of growing up in a war-warped world.
Yeah, I guess we had better concentrate on giving our youngsters what's in our hearts rather than what's on our front pages.
Hmm? Exactly, Bing. The thing that's going to keep us happy and healthy and alive spiritually until the end of time is what we believe in. Belief and faith is what we must never lose. The kind of belief and faith that Francis P. Church expressed so beautifully in his answer to a little girl who wrote to the New York Evening Sun saying, "Dear editor, I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there's no Santa Claus. Papa says, if you see it in the sun, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Virginia O'Hanlon." And this is Mr. Church's answer. "Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They've been affected by a skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible to their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be man's or children, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginia. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if you didn't see him coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that's no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. Did you ever see fairies dancing on the lawn? Of course not. But that's not proof that they are not there. Nobody can conceive or imagine all the wonders there are, unseen and unseeable in the world. You tear apart a baby's rattle to see what makes the noise inside. But there's a veil covering the unseen world, which not the strongest men, not even the united strength of all the strongest men that ever lived, could tear apart. Only faith, poetry, love, romance can push aside that curtain and view and picture the supernal beauty and glory beyond. Is it all real? Oh, Virginia, in all this world, there's nothing else real and abiding. No Santa Claus. Thank God he lives and lives forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia. Nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood.
That's all I've got time for today. Happy holidays from all of us at American Radio Theater.